हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavat Sandarbha, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarana 3, Transcendental Attributes of Bhagavan, page 56. The previous two verses are as follows. When the gross and subtle material forms, which are impositions on the soul and ignorance, are removed by the realization of the devotees, one can realize Brahman. When maya or ignorance weakens, the Lord bestows his mercy on the jiva. The jiva becomes endowed with this treasure. The wise understand that, being situated in this glorious position, this person is worthy of worship. It is explained here that one attains Brahman by direct knowledge of one's sarup, caused by negating the gross and subtle coverings created by ignorance. When maya ceases, one realizes the wealth of one's sarup. Right? So the living entity is identifying with the material energy. Right? So that's what it's meant by here rejecting the two versions of the universal form. You have the gross form, you have the subtle form, you have the metaphysical aspect, you have all these aspects of the universal form. That's what the living entity identifies with. But they're not identifying based on the principle of that it's the Lord. They're not seeing the universal form as the Lord. They're seeing that the universal form is ourself. Right? Does that make sense?
Why would they do that?
Because they think they're the gross and subtle body.
But universal form is, includes everything.
So yes, but when you say that it includes everything, you're seeing that in the context of the Lord.
Yeah.
But here they're not. Because that's what it means by when the gross and subtle material forms, which are impositions on the soul in ignorance, are removed by the realization of the devotees, one realizes Brahman. Right, so you can realize the Lord when you understand you're not the gross and subtle body. As long as you think I'm the gross and subtle body, means just because you don't think you are that doesn't mean you can't work with it. Right? You don't have to identify with your car to drive it. You just have to know what the car is, what you are, what the mechanics of the car, what you can do with the car. You know, what the car can do on the road, all these different things. So when you have that understanding, then you can function. So you see, the devotees, they can function better than anyone else. Right? They can function better than anyone else because they actually understand how things work. So this idea is that you have to be, you know, kind of this modern kind of development, modern knowledge. That's what makes it that you become very excellent. That's not actually the fact. It's when you understand how things actually work, because it's the Lord's energy. It has laws, right? So in other words, the modern, the science looks at laws just for knowledge. Then others will use it for their own personal advantage, right? Because generally, for the intellectuals, just having the knowledge is sufficient for them. They're satisfied, right? But the others want to make some economic or political benefit off of that. Right, so for the devotees, then they see this same knowledge, but they don't see it as atheistic science, which is separate from the Lord. They see it as this is the Lord's nature, right? This is His energy. You know, Krishna says it's my material nature. And so it runs by the laws that Krishna gives. That's what science is based on, observing the laws of Krishna. But they don't want to give credit to the absolute. They want to say, because I saw it, it's mine. You know? But you know, it's you know, how you say, it's like the little kids. You have finders, keepers, losers, weepers. You know this one? You don't have this one. You must have some form of that. It means little kids, if they see something, it's theirs. Even if it's the other kids. But the other kid is not dealing with it, and I saw it, so it's mine now. Right? So it's kind of childish. Is that if you're looking at absolute knowledge, then this is the way it is. Otherwise, how is there science? They're just taking it science that they created it. No, they can only have science because it's based on eternal laws. Right? And those laws are consistent. So the devotee knows that it's like this because it's Krishna's laws. And then the universal form is whatever is the combinations of these particular laws that gives all the different forms and situations and activities and results that you can have in the world. So therefore, according to their particular position, they work with the universal form to serve Krishna. Because what's the difference? If you're in the spiritual world and it's Krishna's energies, you know, being, how you say, managed by yoga maya, it's still who you are, and then what is the situation, then you use that in Krishna's service. Right? In the material world, then we have the gross and subtle body. It's not us, but still it's what we have to work with. Right? And so therefore, identity with the combination of the situation that you're in, you engage that in the Lord's service. You understand? So that's why we're not the body, but we don't actually care what body we have. It's whatever it is, that's what we work with. You know what I'm saying? So this idea is I'm not the body, I can do whatever I want. That means it's actually coming from an atheistic position that I don't care about God's laws and how these things work. I want to do whatever I want. So it's still the same thing. I'm the controller and enjoyer. Just that if I say I'm the controller and enjoyer, especially amongst the devotees, that doesn't sound good. But if I put it into some modern economic, political kind of formula about being good and nice and all that, so now it's like, you know, you sugarcoat the poison, you know, and now it's nice. It's different, you know. The snake has a jewel on its head, so now it's a nice snake. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. So when the living entity rejects the idea that I'm these things and sees it in context of the Lord, right? So then he can see the Lord, he can see the jiva. So it's not that something disappears, that'll also come. So that's coming, that's the karma side, right? So then the jnana side, there's the idea is if the material is all these things, then spiritual means none of these things. So then the idea of rejecting the universal form then would mean that in rejection, then there's nothing. And in nothing, I can do anything. See, that's the advantage of the Mayavad philosophy. It accommodates every philosophy you can have other than Vaishnavism. Because since everything's nothing, you know, and I am everything, therefore I can do whatever I want. You know what I'm saying? That's the bottom line. That's why Mayavad philosophy is attractive, because it supports I'm the controller and enjoyer. I just have to be a little more intellectual about it. You know, being intellectual is sophisticated, you know, it's up to date, it's modern, and all that, and so therefore I like it. You know, I said, of course I'm superior. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like there's something that you want to do that but you can't actually figure out a reason why you should do it, a logical reason for why you should do it. So you feel unconfident. But then when you do figure out a reason, now you're very confident and really in your face and go out there and it's as if it's your right. So before it would be you'd have to find some socio-political reason for it. Now we have a philosophy, so it's like we have more options to say I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? So we have to be careful of that. So that's coming from the impersonalist. Right? Does that make sense? The karma is I feel like it, I do whatever I want. And the other one is I'm the controller of it. It's like that, we're beyond it. There's nothingness, therefore I'm the architect of what happens. Right? And then any combination of these. Does that make sense? So like you said, is that we're looking at a universal form as Krishna's form, and that everything's made of. So we're seeing it in the Krishna conscious way. But we have to continue that this body and that is part of that universal form. It's not me. So I reject the universal form as me. I accept it as the Lord. See, what happens now is I accept the universal form as me. Because the whole idea is I am God. So therefore, that's why I identify with the universal form. Right? I mean, we're identifying with our particular individual aspect of the universal form. We may not see all of it, but, you know, sometimes people see the oneness of everything and, you know, like that, and how you say. But, yeah. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is as being Krishna conscious, then of course you see it connected to Krishna. But you also have to see is that in that context, that therefore we're servant of Krishna. Because that's the basis of the whole thing, is that avidya means that we don't see that we're servant of Krishna. That's the actual problem. The original problem is, I think I'm not the servant of Krishna, but I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? So that gives rise to material consciousness. And if I see I am servant of Krishna, that gives rise to prema. Right? So in other words, I'm the controller and enjoyer, that takes you to lust, and I am servant, that takes you to prema. So that's actually the key point. So we're trying to convince ourselves that we're servants of Krishna. Right? You know, so if by karma we accept it, by jnana we accept it, whatever way we're going to accept it, then that's why we go through. Because you see, the acharyas can give the whole philosophy like that in one sentence. And then they have volumes of books to explain it, because we're not easily convinced. I say, we're a tough crowd, right? You have to work at it.
So when we say it about imposition, we say that by our own, by inference and by inductive system,
yes,
we can realize up to Brahman. So we cannot really remove the imposition of the ignorance from the soul. It's only by the deductive.
Yes, it's only by Krishna's grace. That's the thing, is that we can get up to that point, and even that understanding of Brahman, as that said, is vague. There's some idea of the eternality, the all-pervadingness, you know, consciousness or knowledge or something like that. But that's as far as it goes. You know, I mean, we mention all those. It's like nobody in their philosophy mentions all of those. Right? They mention one of them or two of them. You know, so yes, we're by the association. And so the key of this is association of the Vaishnavas. So Srila Prabhupada is pointing out in the Upadeshamrita that it's by association of devotees you become aware of actually who you are in Krishna, you know, and the actual things like that. Then by that continued association, that will bring you to prema. And then even when we've come to prema, that continued association, that will bring you to deeper and deeper levels of appreciation, that prema. So one's always in the association of devotees. That's the key that makes it work. Because Krishna is there. He's what makes everything happen. But why does it happen? I mean, of course, the ultimate point is Krishna, you know, being this is how he wants it. It's his Icha Shakti. But it still is because he wants it. But if you don't want it, he goes by what you want. Right? But the Vaishnavas go by what Krishna wants. So therefore, his desire follows the desire of the Vaishnavas. Right? So when they preach and they give mercy, then Krishna's mercy follows that. Because otherwise, he's not going to disturb the individuality. He's an individual. Why would he disturb the individuality? Right? Does that make sense? We're working on part of the universal form, and so therefore, we're just one portion of an unlimited conglomerate, so therefore we want to control all of that. You know, everybody becomes part of the conglomerate, because we are. But Krishna, he is an individual, therefore he sees the individuality in everyone. Does that make sense? So when the devotees, because they see Krishna as a person, therefore they see everybody else as persons and how they can serve the Lord. That's okay. No? Okay, it's explained here that one attains Brahman by direct knowledge of one's Sarup. So when you understand your form, then you attain to the transcendental position. Right? Because Brahman means Krishna. caused by negating the gross and subtle coverings created by ignorance. So, by getting rid of when you understand who you are, means you've given up the gross and subtle coverings. So that situates you in Brahman. Right? So when Maya ceases, one realizes the wealth of one's Sarup. Right? So then the Sarup that's there, your form, your natural position, then the wealth of that is the ability to serve Krishna in the association of Vaishnavas. That's the important aspect. Then you can see is that will take you forward to prema. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's the actual point. So you can see is that you're giving up the one, the material identity, you're situating yourself in Brahman on the transcendental platform. Then that, by that wealth of that, one can take one's forward to service to Krishna. You understand? So you have the two aspects. By never forgetting Krishna, that brings you to the transcendental position. By always remembering Krishna, that brings you to prema. Does that make sense? Yes.
It sounds like we don't have to think about our spiritual identity. As soon as we give up material identity, the spiritual identity will appear automatically.
Yes, yes. It's like the ring, the gold ring, is covered in mud. You don't have to... It's not that in the washing process you have to... It's a matter of you just follow the washing process, the ring will appear. Because that is you. That's what we have to remember. It is us. This doubt that, unless we do this, we won't get it. No, the point is you remove the covering, it's going to be there. It's like a banana. You take off the cover, there's a banana inside. It's not that you have to meditate on the banana and do a special kind of ritual to get the banana to appear, because otherwise, so many times you open the banana, there's nothing inside. So, without that special Raganuga sadhana, there's not going to be any banana there. Right? No, that is you. So when we're convinced that it is us, then all you have to do is remove the covering. But even if it is us, it's still... Unless you direct that usness to Krishna, you don't develop prema. Right? Because we're in that position of us, but not connecting it to Krishna. We're just looking at the secondary attributes, Krishna's energies, his vibhutis, and what they can do. Right? So the devotees on the platform of prema, they're taking Krishna's energies and using them to please Krishna. Right? So they know they have the knowledge and skills within those energies. Right? They can take the energies and use them to advantage to get results. Right? So then those results are just for Krishna. Because they identify as servant of Krishna. Right? And they have that particular attraction to serve Krishna in a particular way. Right? So therefore, their use and dealing with the sarup will be very specific. Right? They have their form. They'll use it very specifically in whatever situation in their rasa. Like you have those prayers by the acharyas where you have the one where I think it's like Krishna's coming back in the evening from the cowherd pastures. And when he's coming in, then, and one place, Mother Jashoda, he's seeing her interacting, the cowherd boys, it's another one, then the cows, it's different, the gopis, it's different, Radharani, it's different, the demons on the side, it's different. Same situation, all those living entities, because of their different identity of how they relate to Krishna, then they're experiencing a different rasa, because they're applying that situation in a particular way to please Krishna in that particular way. Right? The same situation, Mother Jashoda is going to use it for parental things. The gopis will use it for the conjugal things. The cowherd boys will use it for the friendship things. Right? The servants will use it for the servant things. Does that make sense? Those in Shanta Rasa will appreciate whatever is the situation. So it's very specific. So just having the sarup is not enough. We've already done that. And we're here. Because we didn't take that sarup and use it specifically towards Krishna. We just saw the sarup can be engaged in the environment we're in to manipulate it to get results that I like. Right? Because we're thinking, oh, if you have the spiritual body, everything's perfect. No, that's why it's called sarup siddhi, not sarup. They're talking about the sarup here. Sarup siddhi means now you're completely attached to Krishna, and now you'll have the opportunity to use that in Krishna's service. That's sarup siddhi. Does that make sense? So the sahajiyas have done a great disservice by putting all the emphasis on the sarup, and that's all it is. It's just about the sarup, having the sarup, and this and that. But you see is that their idea of the sarup is all about their enjoyment with the sarup, not about Krishna's. You know, I'm going to go down to the Jamuna, and I'm going to fill up the pot of water, and then I'm going to come back, and remembering Krishna, I'm going to fall down in ecstasy, and then this senior gopi will come along and wake us up, and then bring us back. And where's Krishna in this? Other than I meditated on him, and I'm getting a pot of water for him. But it was all about the experience I'm gaining from it. Does that make sense? That's the sahajis. It's about themselves. It's self-centered. It's not actually... It's kind of Krishna's there on the edge just because it gives ecstasy. But otherwise than that, there's no more importance to Krishna. It's what I'm going to get out of it. Does that make sense? So that's very different. That's why it says follow in the footsteps. That means footsteps means you're not imitating, you're assisting. Because it's always about, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. What about, how are you assisting those who are doing? Right? Are they meditating, you know, I'm going to hand the pot of water for bathing to this gopi. You know, or I'm going to go out and get the pot, empty pot, hand it to the person who's actually going to get the water. Is that the meditation? No. You understand? Because it's about themselves. It's not about following. So, when Srila Prabhupada in the Upadeshamrita gives this detail about following the footsteps, he quotes the two verses by Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion. Right? And they're right in the beginning, in the second part. Right? So when you're talking about sadhana bhakti, this is introduced. So the point is this, what is the process has already been given. And he's talking about, you know, the Shravana Dasa. You know, about hearing about Krishna and that. And when you have that faith that the name is Krishna and all that, that will bring to the next. Right? Because Varna Dasa, then you're adjusting. Adjusting means you're giving up this universal form. You're giving up the identity with it. That's Varna Dasa. So I'm a servant of Krishna. That's the Varna Dasa. Then I'm a specific kind of servant. That's a detail within Varnadasa. Right? And then when it's come to that point, you're steady in devotional service. Right? Then you can have a taste in all that. That's where then you're going to start to strongly identify with it. Otherwise, if I don't have a taste in the holy name, I'm going to have a taste, because being Jiva, we are Ananda, right? So we have to have some taste. So I'm going to look in something else. Right, and money, and position, and authority, and, you know, and something. You know, having a good time, catching a good wave, you know, whatever it is. So, I'm going to look there. You know, Krishna's going to be there, and when that goes, but when not, I'm going to go the other way. Because we see is that, you know, we were explaining the other day, then the devotee in Asakti, then he doesn't actually care about the material facility. Right? Means what facility he has is this, his money, his position. He doesn't care. That's why everyone thinks he's crazy. Because right? In the material world, you got to care. Otherwise, if you don't care, you're crazy. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that the process has already been clearly given. But that means then you have to be attached to Krishna. You have to be attached to the holy name, attached to the Vaishnavas. And that means then you have to get down and work. And it's not up to you. It's up to you sincerely applying yourself, and then by Krishna's grace, the purification, that reveals your position. So you're not in control here. You're not the enjoyer here. But you will be the most happy you'll be in that position. Therefore, we project onto it a process that, no, I have to do this sadhana. I do this sadhana, therefore I get this result. That's jaimini. God has to give the result of me being a gopi because I did this sadhana and thought about gopis. That's jaimini. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point is that these things are all aberrations. The acharyas, you know, very, and the Upadeshamrita is for who?
Neophytes.
And right there, as it gets up to, I think it's like the eighth verse or something like that, Prabhupada's already explaining how the sadhana goes into bhava, into prema. And the exact things, the shlokas, whatever it is, this is how it works. The neophyte should know this is the problem. And what's the key? The association of Vaishnavas and identifying as a servant of Krishna. Then that brings you to. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point is having the sarup is not the big deal. It's just the natural transcendental situation of the living entity. Then following the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan with that sarup, that is where you get somewhere. Right? So, I can follow in their footsteps here in the way they act in the Sankirtan mission, how they see themselves as servants. That I can do now. I don't have to know my sarup to do that. It's just like this. Let's say you're supposed to go to New York, right? And you get on the bus for New York. Do you have to know? You've never been to New York. Do you have to know what New York is for the bus to get you there? No, you just have to get on the bus the people who know how to get there. Right? Does that make sense? You know, and do what they say. You know, sit inside, sit in the seat. Don't, you know, run around, sit on the top, like that. You know, how you say, hold on to the windshield wipers and make faces out front like you're a gargoyle. You know, they say, don't do these things. Right? And so that's the whole point. This idea is, no, I have to know. That's simply because if I know, then I'm the controller. And then I will then be able to enjoy. But here's no, it's just, you have this position. You simply have to uncover it. And when it's uncovered, then you apply that in Krishna's service and everything's perfect. Because it is you. This is not us. So this idea is, well, what about, you know, the options and all that? That's because we're identifying with the universal. We're identifying with Brahman and Paramatma. We're not identifying with Bhagavan. Because Bhagavan is a person, that means we're a person. So it's very specific. But when we identify with the Jnana and Kriya Shaktis, right? So then we're with the secondary. Then it's a general universal thing. So that's why it's, oh, I could be anything. No, you are who you are. Why would you want to be anything? You know, my car could be anything, you know. You need to squeeze your orange juice for breakfast. You can use the car, right? You know, get out the hubcap, you know, do it on the hubcap. You know, does that make sense? Of course, you'd probably need a 50s car to do that, you know, a hubcap, but whatever. Does that make sense? So, do you see this point? This point is the sarup by the purification process brings you to bhava, because bhava is where the sarup can be understood fully and used. You can't use it before then. Even if you have an idea of it, you still can't use it. You know, it's just like the little girl knows she wants to get married. But she can't use marriage until she is. Does that make sense? So that position of bhava, that's where the sarup is fully understood. But before that, we can understand, I am servant. Because the rati, or the particular attraction, is the detail of I am servant. Right? Like you hear... Let's say there's two different times when there's prayers. The one where Draupadi is speaking to the queens, right? And so then each one of them is telling how they marry Krishna. Yeah. And at the end, they all basically say, I'm servant or maidservant of Krishna. All of them. Even though they're queens. Queens, they own their husband. But they'll say to the other women, I'm a maidservant. Right? You don't say that to the men. You know? That, you know, and at the same time, there's that other time when Uddhava is speaking to the gopis. They say things, and they say exactly the same thing. Right? So this idea, I'm a servant. It happens to be within that particular rasa. Does that make sense? So that's why smarana dasa is first, then varana dasa. Until you hear and accept, I am a servant, then only you can adjust with it, and the detail of that adjustment is then has a specific application. But if you're not identifying as servant of Krishna, you can't be servant in a specific way. Like if I don't want to serve lunch, I can't be identified nicely as the servant of, let's say, the rice. Right? Or the drink, or the doll. But if I identify as servant, then I can say, okay, you know, this one's this. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, the point is that it's not that there might not be an inkling of before that. Like it says, Brahma understood himself as a maidservant of Krishna. But it says he didn't know the detail. Because for us, detail is not important. Because we can't use it anyway. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes.
So can we say the first two levels, it's just a general meditation, then it's on the level of smarandas, it shifts actually from general to specific, and then bhavapandas is where we actually realize our swarup, and then we function in that, on the fifth level.
I would say is that the varnadas, you're adjusting with that position that you're in. But the point is sense prema is an aspect of exclusivity. The faith is exclusively in Krishna, right? We've gone beyond the secondary aspects of identity and usage to think of ourselves as we don't identify with that anymore. So it's exclusively about the faith is that Krishna is the only thing that creates happiness, right? So that's what's happening in smarana dasa, is that exclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
But the specifics of your application of your position, that rati, that will happen in varana.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? That's why varana extends down, so that you're adjusting with the earlier levels within sadhana bhakti will be that I'm servant. And within bhava bhakti, it will be the specific kind of servant. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Then, so you already have that exclusivity is there. Then when one comes to the point of apandas, when one sees, one meets Krishna, you know, personal interaction, and then the senses are engaged in, you know, hearing, seeing, touching, smelling, but all five senses are doing one at a time. Like that. And then all of them at a time. Like this. That kind of aspect. That's then where you're coming to the point of that then the surup can be used to its actual advantage. You know, it's just like, let's say you have a nice car sitting in the garage. It's not being used. It means it is that car, but it's only perfect when you're in the car and you're out on some nice backcountry road. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? Unless it's a Shelby and then you have a nice straight. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the idea is that then now you come to the point where now you can use your surup for Krishna. Now using it in service to Krishna, following in the footsteps of the acharyas, that's where it comes to the point of siddhi. Right? So, minimum, when you get to bhava, then you'll understand what kind of rati you're interested in, or what is your nature. It might come before that in the madhyama stage. You know what I'm saying? And in the madhyama, you can focus a little bit more. So it'll have some advantage. In the neophyte stage, what advantage it will have? Because you're so distracted by the external points that even you know that, you can't. It doesn't have any advantage. You know, unless you want to start a club or something. Then yes, of course. Does that make sense? So it's a natural progression that's there. Right? And then varnadasa, then that simply means that now there's no more dealing with this body. Right? Because this body has baggage. That's why that's as far as you can get. Then, leaving this body, then you're situated in prema. But, being situated in prema, therefore, then the acharyas, when they come down, it's not that the body gets in the way of their service on the platform of prema, because there is no baggage, there's no offenses, there's like that. Because offenses is the only thing that goes all the way through. They're completely eradicated at Vastu Siddhi. Otherwise, the fragrance is still there. Does that make sense? Everything else has gone down in the Madhyama or neophyte platform. Does that make sense? But offenses, that's why it's mentioned about offenses. They warn against offenses. And that's just said, you avoid material sense gratification. But the warnings about offenses, because material sense gratification, that the holy name gets rid of that in the moment. But offenses won't go away until within Apan Das. Then you go to Varna. So that's why we can't come to the platform of prema in this body, but those on the platform of prema can come and function within a body here. And that's why their body is spiritual. Even though it's made of the material elements, it's only used in Krishna's service. Is that? Okay. We're good? Yes.
I'm asking about that mentality you said that I want to know. Prabhupada is writing in Kamasya Nendriya Priti, that verse purport.
Speak a little louder, please. A little louder.
Yeah. In the verse Kamasya Nendriya Priti, Prabhupada writes in the purport that seekers of absolute truth are always overwhelmed to know the absolute truth. And every sphere of life, the ultimate end must be seeking after absolute truth. Like that Prabhupada is writing. So how to understand this, that one wants to know absolute truth is?
Yeah, but then once you come to that point of knowing the absolute truth, then what? Now you come to that platform. Now what?
Sir, of course, but...
So then, is that about the absolute truth? You're serving Krishna because he's the absolute truth?
Not at all.
So then, that's the point. For us, the position of the jnani is an advantage. But once you get to that platform, you have to be able to move beyond that. So because you want to know about God, then that's good. But you also want to know about everything else.
That is jnani. Everything else regarding Krishna.
Which level of jnani are you talking about?
No, I'm just trying to understand.
No, but when you're quoting, what level are you dealing on? See, because you have the... See, as generally we take it that I want to know about Krishna, right? Before becoming a devotee, we take it we're a jnani. No, we're a jigyasu. Jigyasu just wants to know. It's interesting. You know, hey, I'm learning about this, and, you know, I'm learning about the latest Hollywood movie, then the latest Bollywood movie, and then, you know, hey, you know, I dabble a bit in spiritual stuff also, right? You know, so every Hindu gentleman can quote a few shlokas and all that. And, you know what I'm saying? You just want to know. You're happy to know. Where, you know, I heard about there's a new Domino's pizza. Where is it? You know, you just want to know about anything. You know what I'm saying? Jnani means you understand the Lord and who He is, who you are, and how you owe Him. You have a debt to Him. You know, you're obliged to Him. Therefore, out of gratitude, you want to know and serve Him. That's a jnani. Basically speaking, unless you're basically born into a devotee family, right? Or, you know, like that, where they're always about Krishna and all that, and you know about Krishna, and therefore you see how Krishna's doing everything for you. He's Bhaktivatsala. He's that and that. And therefore, you want to serve Him and express your gratitude. That's a jnani. Just you're interested in what's the absolute you want to know. That's a jigyasu. That should be very clear. Otherwise, we always like, oh, I'm a jnani. Jnani is the one that turns into a madhyama. The other three, they're the ones that, if they don't turn into a jnani, they will go away. Right? Artha Tarti Jigyasu by Krishna consciousness, then their desires will be satisfied. When they're satisfied, they may go away. Doesn't mean they'll necessarily give up Krishna consciousness, but they'll just be doing their thing on the side, and then you know, Janmashtami, you'll see them. They will come around, at least in time for Prasad. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is that the jnana is there, but they don't know so much because it's not necessarily about the relationship with the Lord. It's simply that He's God. I'm who I am, and therefore I should serve. But then the point is then there's the position of Him as a Him as a person. That brings it across because I owe Him because all these things are important. Krishna gives me everything I need. But it's the person that's giving. So then the relationship's with the person. So one goes beyond that platform of simply He's God to He's a person. Right? That's where it becomes dynamic. Does that make sense?
Yes, means it is like from duty platform to love platform, or from desire to duty and duty to love.
Yes, yes.
That's a devotee. That's
yes, yes. Like that. That's the process that the devotee is going through. He's trying to bring it to love, so at least there should be duty. Because if you're not, then it's going to be speculative. Like, you know, just like nowadays. Now, as a preaching mission, we should be discussing how to actually make people Krishna conscious. What's the best way to make people Krishna conscious? But instead, sometimes you see we get distracted by discussing modern social issues and trying to, you know, shoehorn them into the context of the, you know, Prabhupada's institution. You know, as if they're important, that without this, it's like all the acharyas and everybody else has all gone back to Godhead. But, you know, somehow or another, Krishna consciousness won't work without these modern social issues. And even when we follow them, and more people have joined, it's like this. When we are more rah-rah and all this, how many people were joining? Tons of people, men and women. Right? Does that make sense? As we are introducing more and more social issues, how many people are joining? So if it's so good, why is it less people are joining? People want the real thing. The other political stuff, you don't have to join to get that. You know, go down to some, you know, more new agey kind of, you know, like a vegan place or something like that. And then just go and start a conversation with anybody there. You know what I'm saying? But you want the absolute truth. The absolute truth is the absolute truth. It's not dependent upon anything mundane. So that's where the difference comes. When you give up the necessity, the need for these mundane things, that without goodness, then we won't Krishna conscious. Unless everybody's nice, not Krishna conscious. Unless we're professionally can't be Krishna conscious. Unless we have, you know, organized and, you know, good management systems in place, you know, you can't be Krishna conscious. You know, unless we fit in, we can't be Krishna conscious. It's just, you know, and saying all that can't preach us. What, then how is it before, in a time when people were much more intolerant. You know, it's like now, New Age stuff, grandmothers talk about it. Back in the 60s, only the hippies talked about it.
Those are the grandmothers.
Yes. Very good point. Very good point. I like that. She says, now those hippies from the 60s, they're the grandmothers. That's why they're talking. Very good point. So it's not even to their credit, really. Yeah. Okay. So, you understand? So it's a thing. People accept anything nowadays. Like I remember back... Goes like 70s and that. You walk down the street with your bed sheets and your shaved head and the mud on your forehead, and people are pointing their fingers and laughing and joking or moving out of the way or doing something. But I remember last time I was in New York, and this was like almost 20 years ago. I walked down the street like that. No one even notices. Because we're not the weirdest looking people there. You know? Goths look more wild than us. You know? So it's just, we don't look strange at all. The only reason people looked at me is because of the peg shoes. They don't even notice the bed sheets. Who cares? Shaved heads are in. So many people have shaved heads. You know, shawls and chudders, everybody wears them. Does that make sense? You know, like that, you know? So, Maxim will think that we're just a Buddhist monk. So it's so much more tolerant now. And then we're saying, oh, we have to be so much more. No. How is it people became joined when that? These same people nowadays are saying, you have to do this. Why did they join? They joined despite that. So it's just conditioning. It's just attachment. It has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness already includes the Vaishnava etiquette that we deal nicely with everybody. So if we're not dealing, it's because we're not following the Vaishnava etiquette, not because, oh, we have to follow modern standards. It has nothing to do with that. Modern standards come from the devotional thing, not the other way around. Nothing works without bhakti, not bhakti works because of karma and jnana. We have to know the philosophy. That makes sense?
Maharaj, can one realize one's swarup in Satvaguru?
No. So you can realize your swarup that I'm a servant. But why would you get that? It means, do the smartas realize their swarup? Smarta Brahmins.
Atmagyan in general, that you are an Atma, can be.
That you can understand in goodness, but can you understand that you're a servant of Krishna unless you come in contact with Vaishnavas? So, bhakti only comes from bhakti. So that I am served, but that I am the Atma, but then how do you define Atma?
It becomes very impersonal.
Yes, that's the whole point. Is that goodness, that's the maximum you'll get because you're still working with material consciousness. Right? So only when you contact Vaishnavas, then you will actually appreciate the real, actual swarup. So they only get a little bit of an understanding. Okay, that you understand that. Okay, nice.
Where is the free will of the Atma?
Where is the free will?
How is it expressed?
And why is this an important question? Why do we need to know about our free will?
Is it the Atma that is surrendering to the Jiva, or is it the Buddhi, is it the Chitta, which is surrendering? I have a question on where is the free will, how is the free will expressed?
No, but why is that an important thing? What about the, you know, that we're controlled by the three modes of nature? Do we have, what about that conversation? Why is it our free will is the important key element?
The question is more as the jiva is conditioned, and how does he really understand that he's the servant of Krishna and
by the grace of the bhakti, by the grace of the Vaishnavas.
So the free will doesn't really start till the time he comes in touch with your devotee, can we say? Then you can say
he's actually engaging his free will properly.
Right.
Before that, he has his free will to be involved in material energy, but then you're going to be controlled by the three modes.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, how long have the British been in India? There wasn't a trick question. How long have the British been in India?
200, 250 years.
How long have the Mughals been in India?
700 years.
Almost 900.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is why is it only now that now everybody has to dress and act like one? You know what I'm saying? Why not before? For hundreds of years this has been there. Why? Because the modes change. Does that make sense? As the modes change, now it becomes important. You know what I'm saying? We're taking it that, the in thing is to merge in with everybody else. But if you notice that once the merging works and all that, now what's the special? In other words, my identity is we're the mergers. But once you've merged, now what's the identity? Nothing. Right? So then, to carry on that identity, now you get back into your own particular ethnicity. Does that make sense? So then, that means then you have to do things that are connected with your ethnicity. No? So that's the whole thing, is that it just goes back to, you're going to go back to following that anyway, if you want to be up to date. So Krishna consciousness is always up to date because it's in the present. So we identify with Krishna and Krishna consciousness and the Vaishnavas and our tradition. And we do that. It's eternal. This idea is it's archaic. That's the three modes. The three modes go through the archaic, past, present, and future. But Krishna consciousness doesn't because it's eternal. Does that make sense? So the point is free will, you actually are able to apply it when you surrender. Before that, people will say there, just like I remember once this guy coming up to us on the street, he was smoking and saying, you know, somehow or another it came out, don't smoke. So he was saying, well, I'm free, I can smoke, you guys can't smoke. But then one of the devotees turned to him and says, no, actually, we're free because we could smoke, but we've decided not to. You say you're free to smoke or not smoke, but I guarantee you, you stop smoking for 2 weeks. You know? You can't do it. You're controlled. You're the one that's in prison, not us. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
In terms of social system, can we say that as long as there's not a proper Varnashram system, knowing our nature also doesn't make much sense, similar to this, not knowing?
No, because the point is you still are who you are, and you can only do what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, why be an illusion? This idea, yeah, you can be anything, you can be anything, as long as your nature is one of those everythings. Right? So that's the whole point, is that this idea is that I can keep changing it around because whatever is best for me then is going to be very, you know, it's advantageous to the economy. It's just like you can be anything. That means, you know, it's just like, I don't know about other places, but I'll just, you know, just speak from the American point of view. If you decide, let's say, you're going to get into skiing, you know, you don't just look around and ask any friends or look in the attic and get some old pair of skis and all that and then try them out. And then if you like it, then progress from there. No, an American has to go out and buy the best skis and the best this, the best outfit, everything. So when he walks into the place, everybody knows he's a new guy. You know, and he thinks he fits right in and he's the man and everything like that. So he has to spend lots of money. Now, after going down and then finding out that, you know, somehow or another trees and rocks don't move when you ski down the slopes, then he might decide not to do that anymore. And then he'll go for something else. So it's really good for the economy. So you can be whatever you like, do whatever you want to do. This is for the economy.
And it's also a kind of Mayavadi understanding.
Yes, purely. Purely Mayavadi. So the point is that you have a nature, and within that nature only you can work. So then you understand the system, even if others don't understand the system. That's like saying, if I go into the kitchen, no one knows how to cook, therefore me knowing how to cook is not an advantage. You understand?
But still, knowing our nature will not work as long as we go through a similar purification process that we can fit really into any Varnashram system. Yes?
No, you're saying you have to fit it into something, but the point is we're looking at it that we have to create the Varnashram system. As opposed to, no, that's how the material nature works. Material nature works according to Varnashram. We accept it or not. That's how it works. So you could say, but you can't do like that. Yeah, but if you do anything else, it doesn't work either. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is it's Krishna's modes of nature, it's Krishna's laws. You follow it, it works. But now whether you can follow it in detail and principle or just in principle, but the point is the principle always works. The detail, different situations, it works more or less. You know, it's just like Yudhishthira Maharaj is in the palace. They're Kshatriyas. He's, you know, in the forest. They're still Kshatriyas. It's not that, oh, if I don't have a crown and this and that and a big throne, I can't be a king. It's just like, you know, what's that got to do with being a king? You know what I'm saying? So they're still Kshatriyas in the forest. Even when they're acting as Brahmins, they're still Kshatriyas. They're doing Brahmin stuff as a political thing to hide that they're Kshatriyas. Right?
Knowing our nature makes more sense for us when we're in the material consciousness, still, or material nature, than knowing our swarup. Like,
no.
It's
understanding our conditioning just means that now we know what to work with for Krishna. Otherwise, you could do so many things, but which ones can we do for Krishna? Mm-hmm. But, yes.
And perhaps some devotees and some Christians, they consider that if you feel fear in service to God, it's a lowest motive.
It's the?
Lowest motive.
If you feel fear.
Fear,
yes.
And if you feel fear to forget about Krishna, because you know that only, but I remember, if you will forget Krishna, material desires will gain death. Does it mean that it's this fear can't please Krishna, and is this fear comes from ignorance, or it's normal for this?
The point is if we're fearful, right? What are we afraid of, Krishna or Maya?
Maya.
Maya. So is that a bad thing? So you're saying the Krishnas are saying that fear in connection with God is a lower level. But are you afraid of God? No. So then where's the point? Afraid of Maya. So they're not afraid of God, they're not afraid of Maya. So, you know what I'm saying? But good chance they're afraid of their mother-in-law, but you know, you have to be practical. We don't trust to Krishna if we're afraid of Maya. So trusting Krishna means I do all kinds of stupid things and then sit back and revel in how Krishna protects me. How is that service to Krishna, being stupid? It means if it's Krishna's body and it's Krishna's service, why you wouldn't take care of it properly so it doesn't get in any danger? But it was one of those where, if God's really there and he does protect us, then I'll close my eyes and walk across the, without waiting for the green light to walk across the four-lane street. And if I make it to the other side, you know, unharmed, then God's there, he's in my corner, right? You know, even though we don't notice behind us that there's a, you know, pile-up of cars and this and that, but that means God was with us, not with them. Right? So this is the whole point, is that we're not appreciating that if Krishna is Vaktavatsala and he's taking care, then our focus is on Krishna. What's the problem of, then what's the meaning of never forget Krishna? It's always remember, so we're not afraid. So how are they always remembering Krishna? So if they're not afraid of Maya, then that means then are they never dealing with Maya? Right? They're just sitting down under the tree and chanting all day like Haridas Thakur, and that's why you don't have to worry about Maya? Right? Or is it that, oh no, but everything's connected to Krishna, so I'm seeing all my family and money and everything that I do and everything in connection with Krishna. And so Therefore, but then the point is then we're absorbed in Krishna. Do we not know the material energy? So how do we deal with money? Oh, money is Krishna. I can spend it however I like. Or is it that I know money and I know properly how to deal and how to, you know, not spend on things I don't need and only spend for what I do and how to invest it and things like that, how to protect it? That's why then you have money. If it's Krishna's money, then do you not know the rules concerning money and deal with it? Or it's just, I do whatever I want. So you have to see is that, what's the motive behind saying this? If it's that you're worrying too much about all these things and not enough about Krishna, they'll say, we're not caring about that. We worry about Krishna. Right? But if it's a matter of, I'm carefree and I do whatever I feel like, then that's not quite a proper understanding. Prahlad Maharaj, he's afraid of Maya. Because Nrisimhadev's asking, all the demigods, even Lakshmiji is afraid of him. But Prahlad Maharaj is not. He said, why aren't you afraid? He says, you I'm not afraid of. I'm afraid of your Maya. So, if they say that, then Prahlad Maharaj says it. They want to complain about him, then hey. I'm sure Sunda and the Marka will welcome them with open arms. Okay. Very good. Okay. The Atmaramas, Kavya. Kavaya, describe the birth and activities of the Lord in the heart, Paramatma. When the gross and subtle covering cease, the wealth of realization of his birth and activities arises, right? So as you're identifying with the gross and subtle body, then the appreciation and understanding of Krishna's position and his birth and activities will be less prominent. But as we give up the attachment to the gross and subtle body, and attachment to Krishna, then we'll see the Krishna's past name and qualities and pastimes, then that increases in value. Right? Because that's, as it says before, that's the wealth of the soul. Wealth, sampati, means directly seeing, right? So sampati das. So that means that's the wealth. That's why the city is perfect, because now it's being engaged. Right? It's just like, let's say we have money in a bank. We have money. But when we're able to use the money for something proper, right? That's then perfection of money. Does that make sense? The forms of the Lord are filled with the bliss of the Lord's Sarup, since they are completely different from material forms. Thus he is described as being without action and without birth, material, and having his birth and actions hidden in the Vedas. Because they just mention it's there, but the full detail of it won't be mentioned. That's the uniqueness of the Bhagavatam. It mentions. This is explained in Sridhar Swami's commentary in the following verses of Akrura's praises. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:48, 23:24. Are my avatars and their actions produced by ignorance, like shell being mistaken for silver? No, this is your pastime. The Lord's pastimes are equal to his sarup. Nama karma sarupani na paricheda gochare. Yasyai kila paramanandam savishnur garbhagas bhava. Another verse has rupa karma. Gita also says, janma karma chame divyam evam yo veri tattvataha. One should know my attractive birth and activities. Bhagavad Gita 4:9. Bhagavan's name. The Lord's name is not material. It is self-manifesting, supported by qualities beyond material words and mind. Right? So, the material world, then it has qualities here. And that's how the forms and name forms and qualities here are supported, is by the material. Right? But in the spiritual world, Krishna's is not supported by material qualities. The qualities are originally from him. He is none different from these qualities. Right there, his sarup. Right. Aprasiddhesta gunanam anamasau prakrit pa, pra kirtita. The Lord is glorified as nameless because His qualities are not known in this world. Vasudevaya Yatma. Right? He's called nameless because His qualities are not known. Because how do you define something? How does something get a name? It's by qualities. Right? So, because we don't know spiritual qualities, therefore the Lord is nameless. Because you can't name Him by material qualities. You can only name Him by spiritual qualities. Right? So that's why the Vedas call Him nameless. Yes?
In the same Maharaj, that the relationship between Bhagavan's qualities and His energy as an effect and the cause. Then the energy is the cause of His qualities.
I would say is that they're non-different. Because the point is the form already has the qualities. So it's not that only through transformation then He has qualities. The qualities are already inherent. So the energy is inherent, the qualities are inherent, everything's inherent. See, because it's not that it works on this logical progression. It's just He is existence. Right? So it already is Him. Now for us, for it to manifest in all that, then we'll see is that if He manifests a particular, medium-sized form according to His internal potency. Then you can say, yes, by then, for the environment in which we're engaged senses are engaged in all that, then you can say is in the manifest that you'll have that progression. But the point is you can have that progression because its basis is Him. So because He is all that, then He can manifest whichever aspect of that He wants. So He has all that, then His energies will manifest that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because He's unlimited. So to have that particular thing, and that unlimitedness, His form is first. It's the form that is unlimited. Not there's unlimited, then there's a form. The form has all that unlimited. This is the point we have to switch the consciousness, because otherwise, by our standard inductive method, we're going to find the impersonal to be the origin, and then the person to be coming from that. Right? When it's actually the person is the origin, and the impersonal feature comes from his person. So it switches how we look at it. Because otherwise, until we switch, when we switch, then we see the person is first, then the impersonal. Then we see is that the knowledge and form and all the different specifics and the variety and transformations are only in value and connection with the person. Right? But if we don't, we start from our inductive position, then we will take it that the impersonal is there. Like if I say, no, everybody should be nice. Just saying that, it's an impersonal statement. Right? Individuals may do it, but the kind of everybody and niceness. Right? Then I'm defining it by that impersonal position. It's an all-pervading quality. Unless good niceness pervades everything we're doing, it's not going to be good. So I'm starting with the impersonal. But the point is until we identify that niceness comes from Krishna, Krishna is who defines niceness. You measure niceness by its connection to Krishna. So therefore, how in my position can I use this in Krishna's service? And how does that support his niceness? How am I using his niceness, in service to him, who's nice? Until I start there, then I'm not going to actually see the situation connected to him. I will see the impersonal aspect and think that's good enough. And then, because I'm doing that from the inductive, naturally that impersonal is a bigger thing as an umbrella for something smaller that I'm dealing with. So it's going to go down, not up. Right? I'm using the inductive. I'm raising it up to a level that's big enough to accommodate others. Right? So like in logic, you present your philosophy, they present theirs. You present a point that includes their philosophy and yours.
Right.
Right? And then you bring it down to the specifics of yours.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to use this umbrella of niceness, then everybody will be on board, then my specific agenda, now I'll apply. So it'll drop back down. But we see in the descending, it's coming down from Krishna, it's starting up. The other one, it started down, I went up to catch everybody and then bring it back down. But there it starts from Krishna, it extends down to our position as an hokshja, then connecting to Krishna, that takes us back up to Krishna in Aprakrita. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? So then we're on the transcendental platform. Does that make sense? So it's a difference in how you perceive things. So that's why you go through, you know, the same points made over and over again from so many different angles just to get us to agree to this point. Right? It starts with Krishna. And we're part and parcel of Krishna. We're servant of Krishna. Therefore, we serve Krishna. Because that's the key. When we see I'm servant of Krishna, that's what takes us through to Bhava. Right? Does that make sense? Then in Bhava, the details of how that service is performed, then that becomes revealed. Does that make sense? You know. Yes?
How can we define any quality in... As we cannot know the spiritual qualities of Krishna, and as Krishna is the origin of all qualities, how we can define beauty, intelligence? We will always end up in some kind of illusion?
No, because Krishna reveals himself. The point is if we're performing activities in service to Krishna, then Krishna reveals himself. Anama so prasiddhatvat arupo bhuta varjanat. He is without material name because he is not known in the world. He is without material form because he is devoid of material elements. Brahma Purana. This is not contrary to the statement in the Vishnu Purana. You do not have a manufactured name or caste. You are the eternal, unchanging Supreme Brahman. O unborn Lord, since there can be no understanding of meaning without making names, you are worshipped by the names of Vishnu, Krishna, Chuta, and Ananta, while rejecting manufactured names. Vishnu Purana 5:18, 53, 54. In the apparent meaning, the word kalpana, manufactured, seems useless. One could simply convey the meaning by saying that the Lord has no name and caste. Moreover, by using the words Brahman and Aja, the names of the Supreme Lord are accepted. For instance, there's a statement like Ajam Ekam Lohita Shila Krishnam, which indicated a person without birth. Saying that Krishna's name is produced, Kalpana, would be wrong. How can someone be worshipped with a manufactured name, since anything manufactured is non-eternal? How could Krishna be non-eternal? The meaning should thus be, quote, in the Lord's names like Krishna and in his pastimes as a devata, human or kshatriya, there is nothing manufactured. Right? So nothing's manufactured means it's a material concept. We're placing a name from our own material experience on Krishna. Right? But it's not manufactured. He's the origin. And then everything else is a reflection of that. So therefore all the names and manufactured forms are coming from Krishna. Right? But not seeing them in the context of Krishna, then we are overwhelmed by the material. We don't see the origin of Krishna. Yeah. Good.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jaya Nitya Gaura.